It's a men's mental health show. Brad Spillane here, Spillo. And a big thanks to Mounties Group and also to all manufacturing personnel, recruitment and labour hire in the manufacturing industry. Give Craig Beachy a call, 0416 700 870, to help with all your staffing solutions. Good show ahead. We apologise for our absence last week. I just had a nice week away up in Yamina and chose some good weather just quietly whilst I was up there. And here we are today in beautiful Katoomba, I think for the first time in a good 2 or 3 years since we've been able to wear shorts and thongs. And it's a balmy 27 degrees out there at the moment, I believe. But good morning, Boatstar. How are you, mate?
I'm good, thank you. And yeah, it is good to be in shorts. I was out in the garden yesterday, putting in some new plants, some new natives, and bringing more flowers into the garden to restore and provide the aesthetic of flowers. Flowers are amazing because they're only there for a moment, really, aren't they? I mean, you know, for a week, 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Although the Waratahs can give you quite a long flowering sort of time, and Proteas. Yeah. But the Waratahs are out at the moment in superb form. Yeah. Yeah. But there's another flower I want to refer to, is that my daughter, Anya, and her boyfriend, Aaron, have got engaged.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
Oh, congratulations, Anya and Aaron.
And, you know, engagement is a wonderful thing, isn't it? An engagement ring can be symbolised in a ring, and she's certainly sporting something rather beautiful that Aaron has carefully orchestrated or created, you know, curated. Yeah. But, you know, the bigger thing about engagement, is about saying something to each other about, I want to create a life with you.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And then what a journey for the two of them to actually say, well, how will this life unfold for us? You know, what will we privilege in this engagement together? What are our core values? You know, the thing that you were identifying in the list that we might talk about today. Yeah. What are the core values that may emerge in the engagement with each other? Yeah. And how might the engagement survive points of difference and conflict? Because that always, at some level, emerges. How does the engagement also allow the love to be the dominant basis of their communication, their exploration together? So, Anya and Aaron, I'm giving a shout out to you both and to your engagement with each other. And, of course, your engagement with us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you, lovelies.
Yeah, well, I'm proud father, you mate. That's wonderful, Bades. Beautiful. Congratulations, both Anya and Aaron. Wow, man. That's pretty exciting, eh?
It is exciting.
Hey, I've got some exciting news to mention also. The CBAA, which is the Community Broadcast Network that goes Australia-wide, dropped into RBM here at 89.1 FM Blue Mountains. So basically, all the community radio. So if you look at like Shires or like Warringah, you've got the Blue Mountains, you have one in Penrith, you'd have another one in Bankstown. So there'd probably be a good dozen or so across the Sydney metropolitan area community radios. And so when there's, and all those presenters are voluntary. And when those presenters aren't on, the network switched over to the National Broadcast Network, which goes Australia-wide. And they dropped in last week to talk about our show, the Men's Mental Health Show, and they want to put us on nationally. So, isn't that a wonderful thing? It's a huge thing. So that even includes Tasmania. I'm guessing.
even Tassie.
Gosh. So mate, kudos to you, Bosa, you know, and to many of the guests that have been on before us. And
So
I'll supply them with copies of previous shows, and you know, we won't try and push our luck, but we can see if we can get some of those shows out there as well. And
fantastic.
Isn't that a wonderful thing?
That is a wonderful thing to be identified, recognised, valued, affirmed. Yeah, man, that's kudos for you too. I mean,
cheers,
you dreamed this thing up and said, I want to put something out there. And so this is an affirmation for you too.
We always thought, you know, it's a bit of a funny thing, is that it's not really radio, a lot of this, but as it's turned out, it's been quite a success, and the momentum behind the show is forever evolving and building. And couldn't have done it without you.
Thank you.
Should have bought a bottle of champagne or something.
Yeah.
Although I don't think the CBAA would have appreciated that. So we
Yeah, maybe. But let's suck in a sense of self-validation, for the efforts that we have put into it, and sort of see it as an inhale of gratitude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, spot on. If you need to get hold of Budster, you can do 04244 16969. Buddy's available face-to-face here at Wentworth Falls, or you can get him, of course, via Zoom or Skype. Just give him a call. Here or abroad. Had another call from WD Huey this morning, a lovely fellow, of course. He's the mental health coach to the tradesmen, who's been doing some great stuff. So if you're the CEO or general manager of a company, he's a wonderful fellow. He's got a beautiful Scottish accent too. Aaron Huey's his name, or WD Huey, 04120945255. Now, getting back to this list, I can't take credit for the whole list because John actually put that most of that together, what I sent to you. So kudos to John Millam as well. And we might get John back in a week or two. He was, he's been wonderful.
Absolutely. And what a great list.
Yeah, he's on the mark.
He's on the mark, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And I did actually grab an hour this morning to cogitate, to think, to say, well, with that very powerful list, it's the one thing that of each of those 12 items that we could offer something, you know, for men who and women who are listening today that could fall into your heart and minds and you go, wow, I might want to say yes to that. You know what I mean? Yes to making a difference for myself and for others.
Yeah.
Because men's mental health is just a fantastic invitation for us to examine and open ourselves up to the question of mental health. I had a young, he's a middle-aged man. He's been exploring his mental health for some time. He rocks in every 2 years. He'll come in and do a bit of reflecting with me, his mental health.
Yeah, sure.
He thinks there's some trauma there that could be showing up, particularly in the way that he uses work, and he can't ever stop. He's got to keep busy,
right.
And that's a bit of a clue that there might be something that one is avoiding. That could be a trauma history. One of the things I took a note. What did I say here? Trauma.
Yeah, sure.
We always underestimate trauma.
Mm.
But unexamined trauma in your life will keep infiltrating into the way that you can live a life.
Right.
And if the trauma is unexamined, you are forever hindered in your development because it keeps infiltrating.
Yeah.
It keeps showing up. Mm. And it might show up in depression, it might show up in anxiety, it might show up in a mania or addiction, it might show up in self-doubt, confusions, all those sorts of stuff. What I said here, limiting and blighting a life, because it's the story that we tell ourselves that can maintain the trauma. And the requirement is that this trauma in your life is to unpack it and pick through it and keep picking through it and keep picking through it until you're ready to tell a new story.
Yeah, or ready to kick it in the butt and say goodbye. Yeah.
You got to say goodbye to the old story.
You know, I mean, I've had many things through my childhood and whatnot and over the years. And still sometimes when that I see something, it'll trigger that.
Absolutely.
And I immediately go to that.
Yep, no, and it's as vivid, as strong as the first day you became aware of it.
Hey, exactly. It's like when I sneeze, but that I get that split second pain of, the trauma I caused, physical trauma. But isn't it amazing, for all the wonderful hours, I guess, I've done through therapy and rehabilitations and doing this show, yet as soon as those triggers, that trauma, the first thing I do is everything I can possibly to avoid dealing with it or confronting it or as you often say, sit with it.
Sit with it, yep. Lean into it.
And some of that trauma goes back 30 years, 40 years.
Yeah.
Some of it goes back 3 or 4 or 5 years, whatever.
Yes.
But immediately, isn't it funny?
Some argue that being born is a trauma.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the first beginning of an expulsion from paradise, if you like, or that we suddenly have to engage with a world that's far bigger than ourselves when we're in there on our own sucking our thumb as little fetus.
So people would be bombing. I imagine someone like Basil Fawlty would probably have that, wouldn't he? You
know? Oh, yeah, no.
Because every moment's a soul-destroying siege.
If I put him on a mattress and say, let's start breathing into your birth, I mean, he'd be wailing, wouldn't he, from the top of the rooftops. Absolutely.
But I know. Well, it's good that we can put some fun to it. But it is, because it is such a serious topic. So how do we move into sitting with trauma? How do we go about, say, in my case, of continually having wonderful tools and techniques of avoidance, which really aren't wonderful, but I have to say, they're pretty good avoidance techniques I've got to deal with it.
Okay. Well, it's telling us that trauma is painful, isn't it? It's a reminder, if you like, when things went catastrophically wrong.
Mm.
And we sort of avoid the catastrophes of life, if you like, because it brings up so much maybe grief and loss or terror of another catastrophe sort of at some later date that I have to deal with.
Yeah.
Like death, you know, for a lot of people find... Yeah. They're dying as a reality, confronting, and they avoid that as much as they can. But look, we're blessed with a memory. We'll always revisit those points of suffering. That's why I think unpacking and unpicking one's trauma journey and the story that accompanies it, the story that has been grown up around the event, that's very, very helpful because there are lessons. There's always a lesson. There's always a teaching in events that are catastrophic in our lives. And I think the sort of the smart money is on understanding what those lessons are and being able to rebuild a new story, which is ultimately resilient, you know, which ultimately points to our strengths and our mastery and the way that we console ourselves in terms of difficulties.
Sure.
The stories that we tell ourselves that actually bring a smile to our faces is our recovery.
Yeah.
So we do talk about recovery in meaningful ways, and it is an invitation to recover from trauma.
Yeah.
And, you know, to give up on that invitation is also a contraction.
Mm.
So if anybody's listening and sort of have a trauma or think that there is something that gets in the way of you feeling that you can approach your life with a degree of sort of confidence, you know, take some time to do the work of examining what that catastrophe was for you. Write it up. Make a huge list. Get a drop sheet and hang it up in your kitchen or your bedroom and look
at it. Can't avoid it then.
Yeah, you can't avoid it then. So you sit in it. The thing is that what's interesting here, isn't it? What our cognitive capacities allow us is a chance to reframe the trauma and make it more accessible to ourselves so that we can sit in it without actually running for cover. Yeah? That's the thing we've got to learn is how to sit with it, in it, without running for cover. Without going, oh my God, it's so shocking, I can't possibly go there.
Because using those and avoiding it and not sitting in it and running for cover, then of course it just causes surmountable amounts of shame.
Yes.
Certainly for me.
Yes.
And I'm sure for many other men and women. Children as well. But so it just makes complete sense exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
And it takes a certain amount of courage to actually sort of sit in the story, the old story. And you've got to ask yourself the question too, so where does the old story come from? I mean, who were my guides that gave me some instruction that led me to create a story that is now less than satisfactory? I mean, you know, maybe at the beginning of the trauma, the story had some utility, had some use, you know. It had descriptive power. It was a shocking thing. But stories need to be upgraded. They need to be retold.
Yeah.
They need to be reframed. So we need, yes, absolutely, the validation of story, because we are story-creating species.
Yeah.
That's our genius.
Good point.
But we tell stories often that are only partial truths. That's why we need to upgrade our stories so they are more inspirational, they're more visionary, you know, and they speak to us in kinder ways. You know, when you create a story that is, I should have done that better, you know, I'm a waste of time. I'm an embarrassment to myself.
Yeah.
I'm better off. I'm dead. Everybody would be better off if I actually check out, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a grim story, you know what I mean?
My trauma's worse than yours.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff.
I never went through what I went through.
What? You only had a cardboard box? Man, I had to sleep out on the ground in snow, you know, with nary a blanket.
Yeah.
We can outdo each other with our stories. But storytelling about recovery is an astonishing feat of imagination and curiosity and recovery.
Yeah.
And I think we need, I've done this for myself. I remember being in therapy. I've done a fair bit of it because I offer it. I thought I'd better actually experience it, and it was one of the most helpful things that I've done.
Mm.
But one day, the therapist said to me, "That do you think that the story you just told me is an old story that you use to comfort yourself, and maybe inadvertently remain stuck?" Man, was I offended?
It makes so much sense. Well, did it? Did
oh,
it,
was I offended? That's my story. I'm clinging to it. How dare you suggest that it's got a use-by date? You know, I was astonished. I was so offended. Yeah. But then, you know, recovering from my being offended, I realised that, okay, so I'm self-soothing myself with an old story, but surprisingly, it's not giving me recovery. Yeah. It's not taking me into new territory.
Yeah.
So maybe I can let go of an old story that I trot out about. Well, you know, this is what happened to me, man. You know, and look at those points of inspiration and vision, and when I did things the right way, and self-affirming, because ultimately. We have to learn how to self-affirm each other and ourselves in order to actually achieve a different outcome.
Mm.
So if you're caught in your misery,
it's just going to keep going.
It's just
going
to keep going.
It's going to ruminate.
That's going to be the story. It's going to ruminate.
Like the chief, I always bring it up. Gary Sims says, you know, mistakes aren't bad things as long as you're not making the same ones over and over again. And it's no difference in this situation, is it? You know?
And if you've got an old story which is actually clouding your judgment, your repetition is going to be about that story and about the misery that came out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
So we owe it ourselves for a rebirthing, you know, for the courage to actually craft together a new reality that is ultimately an invitation to be in life.
No, well said, man. I keep coming back to what you're saying, but I keep going off on a tangent to thinking about, you know, my own story, my own journey and some of the things. And
sure.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's wonderful, man.
Sure.
Yeah, no, good on you, man. This is a good discussion. Hey, listen, I also just wanted to mention, if anyone's got a question whilst the show's on, you can text me on 0404-077-666. Or if you've got a story to share and you can come up face-to-face, we prefer to do this face-to-face. A little bit more difficult doing it on the telephone just because of the way things are set up here. You know, give me a call on 0404-077-666 or Bradley Spillane or Men's Mental Health Show on Facebook. And, personal message me and we can go about it that way. I've had a few people contact me over the last week or so, which has been great. And so once we're sitting in that trauma and I guess confronting it, if you like, or facing it. And some traumas are far worse than others. I mean, I'm just thinking of a couple of situations where I've had, I can't help but think of where my son's at the moment, Jeremy. And what's going on there and the similarities I had at his age of many things. And, you know, he's just using some wonderful avoidance techniques that he's got, no doubt, genetically through his old man. But you know, if he's able to sit down, or if I'm able to sit down with him and talk about some of those things that, you know, have come up either between him and I, or what's happening at school or with some of his mates, then, you know, that's his only way forward, and it'd be a lot easier to do it as a young man, as opposed to someone who's 50 or myself, or, you know, in their 70s, such as yourself.
Yeah, to get an early opportunity to examine something, you know, can be enormously helpful. Mm. I had a father ring me up and say, "Look, I'm worried about my 16-year-old. He's not sure about school. He's not going to school that often. You know, he says he wants to have a crack at it, but I think he needs someone to talk to. Any chance you can make an appointment?" Right. And I meet the young man. He's really interesting. He says, "I'm looking for options. You know, I'm not sure the school's giving me very much. I'm not sure what my options are." Well, that's a legitimate question.
Yeah, absolutely legitimate
question. Yeah. So I treat him like a young man, you know, with some ideas and some nous, some understanding. And we have a very interesting conversation. And he says, "I want to come back," because that was a helpful conversation. You didn't actually make me wrong. You understood that I was looking. That was a genuine inquiry on my part. Yeah. You know, what are my options?
Hey,
so good on for the father to actually sort of, you know, set the appointment up, and good on for the young man for answering very cleverly and intently the questions that I was putting to him, which are just simple questions.
Well, I think the wonderful thing is how he's able to have the skill to challenge, you know.
Absolutely.
You get that skill. That's something you can work on, isn't it?
Yeah, work with.
Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
And, you know, we all go through these great questioning times, and we would like to think that that if we're met intelligently and with curiosity by others around us to help us actually work through the deeper layers of possibility in our living, in our lives. I guess what I'm saying is, if you end up sitting in a therapist's office or consulting room, use the space for your growing.
Yeah.
And look, the therapist can't listen to you and wants to actually sort of wants to correct you at some level.
Mm.
Yeah, find another therapist, because there's many good, well-trained therapists who are very willing to listen and are very helpful, because I'll open up some points of reflection for you. That's what therapy is empowering, is that that the right questions will be asked of you that lead you into your own journey with intent and with an aim and a purpose.
Mm.
Yeah. This is the Men's Mental Health Show, and we're exploring the many things that can come up in a person's life. One of the things you talked about was anger management, and I was thinking to myself, nowadays, if somebody wants to do some anger management, I say to them, "Well, okay, absolutely, let's look at anger. So, let's do a cost and benefits to your anger story." Let's get the notepad out. Let's get the drop sheets that I've got in my room, and let's have two columns: the cost of your anger and the benefits of your anger.
Yeah.
And let's make a huge list and sit in this, and you might begin to see that the cost of your anger is far greater than the benefits.
Just slightly. Yeah, that's a great way of doing it, isn't it? It just reminds me of, you know, of my Year 8 math teacher, Mr. Hawthorne. That's something, and how he would put something together like that. But that's a brilliant example, I guess, of realization, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's an opportunity, isn't it?
Yeah, I was talking to a bloke last night who, you know, he gave me a call. He's in a bit of a spot of bother. You know, he's had an argument with his girlfriend, and you know, then the police have arrived, and he's decided to go on with the police.
So what
could have been just a basic talking to or whatever has ended up with three or four charges, and he's got himself. Now look, maybe 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago you might have been able to get away with that. The police might have been able to sort of give you a bit of a push back if you gave them a push, but today the cost of anger
is far
greater than it was a decade or two or so ago.
Look, Sergeant Pringle in the Te Aroha precinct in the North Island of New Zealand gave me a boot up the arse.
Yeah.
And it was a well-directed boot, I must say. Yeah. And he had size 12 shoes on, so, you know, I felt it.
Yeah.
But it changed the direction of my life, you know.
Yeah.
In a positive way, I thought to myself, well, maybe I need to sort of rethink my my rebellion, if you like, you know what I mean? So... Yeah, but now it's charges, and now it's a criminal conviction, and it's for life. You know what I mean? Yeah,
and the cost of that.
Yeah,
you're traveling. Your next job, relationship.
It goes on and on. Yeah. So you might avoid the boot, but you've got a different type of, you've got a bureaucratic boot now that's actually left a mark on the direction that your life might go into. The thing about anger is that it always is a response to a threat.
Right.
Or fear. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Or a sense of injustice. That's where anger comes from. And often it is also to do with a loss in your life. But it's an energy. I think that's the thing we need to sort of be aware of. It's an energy. And we need to use that energy in order to begin to understand something about who we are, where we're going, what is the threat, what is the fear that I've got, and step away from the idea that I'm using my anger for power. And an idea of controlling a situation. You're not. That ain't going to happen. But you can use the energy to say, what do I have to learn in this situation that becomes advantageous for me and the people that I care about? How can I use this energy? Because that's what it is. It is an energy.
Oh, yeah.
And there's so many examples of people who have been caught up in anger and have actually then said, I'm going to do some change work here. I'm going to either change myself, I'm going to change some silly law that exists in our society in order to make a difference in people's lives.
Yeah.
That's a really constructive use of anger.
Spot on, man. It's a shitload of energy you're wasting. Yeah.
Yes.
But I love that anger is a response to, generally, to a response to a threat.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Look, I didn't want to bring this up today, but there was another situation that they're dealing with at the moment where there was a mental health check, you know, and I was having a discussion with my friend. And we see, you know, it's not a beat up on the police or whatever else, but then the Chris Minns has come out and said, we're going to send some of our police over to the UK. And get them trained up because of how they do things there, or to New Zealand. But there's a thing there that they don't have. I mean, because we're all human, aren't we?
Yes.
Police officers, ambos, fire, it doesn't matter what we do.
Yeah.
Or if you've got a mental health condition or disease, however you want to call it. You know, I think if we go about things without creating a threat, then it's such a better outcome.
Yes.
In the next place. Like, you know, you could be driving in the car, someone's cut you off, let it go.
Yeah, sure.
And the amount of times, myself, I've not been able to let it go. It does. And then afterwards, and it brings us back to, again, trauma it can cause, you know?
Yeah. See, what's interesting is...
Around and around.
You know, somebody actually flashes, you know, passes you or gets a bit too close or cuts in on you and sort of stuff. And then you raise the fist and you follow them harder and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
There is a threat when someone's driving badly. Of course there is. They could have caused an injury. They could have ran into you, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. But if you respond to that threat through an escalation on your part by actually sort of tailgating that person who cut you off, you got to hang on to the escalation. Is that the real response? Or is that just you? That's the question. If your anger causes an escalation, it's probably not going to work out in your favor. Mm. And I've seen that time and time and time again.
Yeah. And it's predictable a lot of the time, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, when you see those people that are able to have that self-control.
Yep.
The way they conduct themselves afterwards. I mean, a great example would be the bowler comes in to bowl. You crack him for a great shot through the covers. 9 times out of 10, you know when the next ball's going to be. Up around the rib cage, under the armpit. And I used to love it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And so I would purposely go out, which is a bit silly nowadays when you think about it. I'd go out to bat without a helmet.
Okay.
So they'd bowl there. Because that's why I used to love it up around there.
Yeah.
You know, because when I played as a kid, the kids in the neighbourhood, I was the smallest, shortest kids, you know. So when they're bowling Yorkers, I was generally up around my ribcage back then. But it's predictable, is what I'm saying. And it's just, I guess it's an instinctive, natural response for many, many men and women on so many occasions. So, that's a good point, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you see those people, they have that wonderful control. You know,
yeah.
I often walk away when I see something like that, and I go, "Wow, look at the way that guy." Or I might be looking at something on the Facebook feed, and I go, "Wow, I wish I could do that."
Okay.
Or how that response was, or how that person reacted. Wow, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But yeah, when people react in ways that don't lead to escalations,
yeah.
In fact, they de-escalate a situation. Mm. That's a really
that's
a new invitation.
Mm.
And it also brings down the energy, because once a situation becomes an escalation, there is no control anymore.
Mm.
You're caught in the moment, and the moment will generate its own story.
Yeah.
And you end up being a player in it,
yeah.
And you're going to come out with a negative score against your name.
Yeah.
So if you're really trying to actually use anger for power and control...
Yeah.
The reality is, you have no. It's going to escalate, and you will have no power and control anymore.
Yeah.
It'll be out of your hands. Mm. Suddenly, the whole book and the police force is throwing something at you, or they're tasering you on the ground.
Yeah.
So, walk away from that idea that your anger is about trying to control something, and it's a power.
And it's not an excuse. It's not something that you can say, "Well, I did that because this happened." It's accountability. No, good point. Just a quick break. Men's Mental Health Show. We're here with Bodie Marsden, Bodster, of course, psychotherapist, located in Wentworth Falls. I'm going to go and see if I can remember this number. 0424 416 969. 0424 416 969.
Absolutely.
Let's just head off just to a quick announcement from a couple of our sponsors, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Every Tuesday morning from 11 a.m. on Radio Blue Mountains, Brad Spillane holds a thought-provoking look at mental health issues for men living in the Blue Mountains. Regular guests on the show are Bodie Marsden, a Wentworth Falls psychotherapist, Blue Phillips, a retired Army general, and Gary Sims, an RUOK ambassador. Spillo attempts to help men understand their thoughts and emotions and to recognise that being vulnerable is not a sign of weakness, but rather a sign of courage, strength and bravery. The Men's Health Show is a must-listen for everyone in the Blue Mountains community, and it's here every Tuesday morning on Radio Blue Mountains 89.1 FM from 11 a.m.
There we go. They've put up a new promo for the
absolutely
Men's Health, Men's Mental Health Show. What about that? Big thanks to Peter Walker and Reggie.
Yes,
I
absolutely.
Fought the law and the law won Lawless in here. He does some terrific stuff. So they've been... And, of course, Ron Green and everyone else here at RBM being a wonderful support and, getting behind the show. It's, as I said, the momentum just continues. It's
fantastic.
It's wonderful. So just before the break, we're going through a couple of things. We've been, talking a bit about trauma and anger management. It sounds pretty simple, doesn't it? You know, I often say that it's pretty simple life if we can just add a little bit of love and kindness to things. You know, and it's pretty tough with so much division. I know with The Voice at the moment, it's just dividing a nation, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
It's quite sad.
Yeah.
And, regardless of your points of view on it, we just got to also understand that everybody's entitled to their way of thinking, and that we don't have to be so bloody righteous all the time, do we?
We don't, but I guess what I'm interested in is where is the conversation in which we take some responsibility for how we got to the opinion that we are offering.
See, there it is.
See, that's a conversation I'm interested in.
Yeah.
And that feels more honest
that
if we start taking ownership and can reflect on why I have a conservative perspective or a denial perspective or an affirming perspective, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
How did you get there? I think that's a opportunity to pause, to actually sort of slow down the sort of topic of conversation, because then you've got to dig into, well, how have I arrived at this particular view?
Yeah.
What is the emotional response it's coming from? You know, is it historic? Is it, well, my parents voted Labor all their life, so I vote Labor? Or my parents actually thought Indigenous people had it too easy, or that they all... What has somebody said? You know, some people go out there in Australia and say that every Aboriginal person who's born gets a free car. so these ideas are extraordinary, aren't they?
Yeah.
But I think I think that's the conversation we need to have is how have I arrived at my opinion? What are the facts that I'm drawing from that has shaped my opinion? And have I dug deeply into exploring something?
Yeah.
So I think that's what we owe to each other is that willingness to actually talk about why and how I have this opinion. Not the why my opinion is important, but how I got there.
Yeah.
And what other information I could let in order to be curious about, is there another position? Or how might I moderate my position? Or how might I depth it? Or how might I even discard my position and find another one? So that's reworking your material. That is going into an exploration of the moment that I'm speaking from something as if it's a permanent aspect of who I am. But everything is provisional. Everything is open to reinterpretation.
Yeah.
That's the nature of dialogue. That's the nature of discourse. That's an opportunity for having another idea to work with rather than the core ideas that have been shaped by parents, history, trauma, whatever that has gone in my life. So that's, you know, we're talking about communication. Words are incredibly powerful, aren't they? I mean, they give us an opportunity to actually say who we are, what we need, and how we can help.
Sure.
Now, if words are just used for functional transactions, like pass me the butter, please, that's hardly meaningful sort of conversation. But if we're willing to say that I'm talking at the moment to say, well, this is who I think I am. This is how I think I can help and what I need. For men to be able to ask themselves, what is it that I need in this situation when there's a threat? What is it that I need? That's a different conversation immediately.
You know, I look at it and I was having a discussion with a mate about this, you know. So 2005, I played cricket for Hardball Diggers for 35 years. And I didn't want the club to go down, you know. They're losing $250,000 a month. Okay. And so the chairman of the he approached me. He said, listen, mate, you've got a pretty good cricket club here. You're one of the biggest sub clubs. Would you come on the board? And I went around to his place a couple of times for dinner. And he said, look, we're going to be bought out. We're thinking of being bought out by the Mounties. Okay, big club out here at Cabramatta or out Pritchard. He said, look, your first year, if we do go on that track, you'll be on a board, but then it'll be changed to an advisory committee, right? And I said, oh, okay, so explain a bit of that to me. And he said, well, the Mounties, the mother club, they can only have one board. Even though they own our club, they can't have two boards.
Okay.
So, and it's a perfect example. I said, so why do they need an advisory committee? He said, well, they don't know anything about your cricket team or your table tennis team or your snooker club or your pokie rooms or your what you're doing for surf clubs and what you're doing for other clubs. And they'll leave that to the advisory committee. Now, they don't really want to step on your toes, but if they can be supportive in any way, shape or form, that's what they want to do.
Okay, yeah.
So take race and everything out of it. For me, that's how I sort of look at exactly what this situation is. It's an advisory committee. Now, with people that are experts in the field of looking after Aboriginal needs. And then I heard somebody else bring up those very words, only I think it was maybe last night, it might have been on the ABC or something. So I thought, but it's a perfect example, exactly what it is. We're not experts in Aboriginal communities and Aboriginal needs and whatever, you know, our Indigenous or First Australians, however you want to call it, need to be looked at. And the argument is, well, we've already got that. No. But anyway, I look at it in a sense that, you know, we've got education, we've got the advisory committee for education, we've got foreign, we've got transport, you know. Anyway, it's you know, blue was here, as I say often, it's 2023. What are we doing?
Yes.
What's the rest of the world doing, you know?
Exactly. You know, I think the fundamental idea that communication is about the opportunity to be heard.
Yeah.
You know, we just can't walk away from that. And I think it is true, isn't it, that if you analyse the sort of attempts to shrink the gaps of life expectancy, incarceration, health outcomes, all those sorts of things, that the current system that we've been using hasn't delivered, hasn't shrunk the gap. So I think we have to then go back to the drawing board, where we have to sit with, well, maybe the voice provides us with an opportunity to value cross-cultural collaboration together to come up with solutions that will shrink the gap, that will increase life expectancy, that will reduce addiction rates, that will increase educational attainments on part of Indigenous people. And that's a positive response. Mm. That is not giving in to activisms or that sort of stuff. And I guess when people have listened to me, I've flourished.
Mm.
So I'm pretty sure that Aboriginal people, Indigenous people being listened to, not only in Australia but throughout the world, there will be a flourishing and there will be trickle down from that, and that will advantage us who are in a more privileged position.
Embrace it, man.
Exactly. To actually get another perspective that we can draw from in order to be able to understand this wonderful world that we're in.
Isn't that an amen to that, mate?
Yeah, and amen to that. Absolutely.
And I, you know, I hear the biggest, I guess, question against the voice is the argument is the cost. Well, it's going to cost us a lot as we don't as well. I mean, we spend a lot of cost worrying about extinction of our animals or the Great Barrier Reef. We're spending billions in restoring or regenerating. You know, come on. You know what I mean?
No, it's
just across. Again, it comes back to that. Just a little bit of kindness, a little bit of respect, a little bit of acknowledgement. Anyway, that's just my opinion. I probably shouldn't express that, but it's just such a pertinent topic at the moment. It's everywhere we look, isn't it? You know, I was looking at the BBC, on SBS, their news. It was the first thing that came up on their news.
Yes.
Well, on the world news.
You know, if we're talking about men's mental health and adolescent boys' mental health, we do have to listen. We do have to actually hear the voice as much as we have to hear the... We can apply that. We must apply that to our Indigenous folk, the First Nations people of Australia. The weight of history, recent history, that's where the trauma is, where they declared Australia terra nullius. There's no one here.
Or flora and fauna.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So that's an unquestionable and unchallengeable premise that there is no trauma as a result of these are animals and we're stroking the head of a dying race. Yeah. That was the original premise. And some people were more direct. They said, the sooner they're gone, the better.
Yeah.
But
we give more love and care towards a koala bear being extinct.
So all of these are sort of distortions. But what I'm interested in is words that explore vulnerability, words that explore grief, words that explore our needs. And look, this includes white men's needs and it includes Indigenous people's needs. But what I've loved is in men's groups, what I've seen is when a men's group really starts to do the work of taking ownership of their individual opinions, what we begin to realise is that there is very little difference in the stories that we tell each other in a group of men, and we become closer. We start to collaborate.
Ah,
we start to join together. Yeah. We start to have a collective vision. Yeah. We identify.
Yeah.
That's what the voice will offer Australia. So we have to be mindful.
Great example. Perfect. And I see that in the men's start. We talk about it all the time, don't we?
Of course.
Just the astonishing movement from some blokes at the table from, 2 years ago to today.
Absolutely. And I've run many groups.
It's inspiring too, man.
Is inspiring.
Yeah. When a bloke first comes to the table, it's a pretty intimidating thing when you've got nine other blokes there. And it gets to him, oh, look, there's not much going on. Still some blokes say that, no, I'm okay, everything's okay. Still got the defences up. But then, you know, you hear some movement from another bloke, and the next week that guy that had his defences up is starting to talk about his vulnerabilities, starting to let his guard down, starting to, you know, because the discussion is open.
Yes. And openness allows you to bring yourself in.
Yeah, man.
And once you feel that you can belong to something, that makes the world a difference in terms of actually opening up and dropping all those defences, as you so rightfully point out. Mm-hmm. And our defensive capacities, that is a part of the human story.
Mm.
And it's very easy to activate one's defences against others. Mm. But we do have means by which we can create bridges in order to connect with each other.
Yeah.
And out of connection comes collaboration.
Yeah.
Now, all the time, if people are disconnected from their families or disconnected from their mob or disconnected from their siblings, that they then hide in their addictions or their other ways of consoling themselves. But there is such a loss of the affirmation that comes out of belonging.
Mm.
I think the voices are actually about saying, well, let's all belong together.
Yeah.
And it's not about race. It's about creating a meaningful relationship with each other. It's actually a relational journey that we're on by saying yes to the voice.
Yeah.
It's not about division and power and radical suddenly running the country and demanding that we all that stuff.
Let's be honest. Let's just say, I mean, if Albanese came out and said no, we know what Dutton would be doing, don't we?
Yeah.
And if it was a few on the other foot, Dutton would be saying, we need a voice.
Yeah.
No, seriously, we would.
Yeah, no, you're right.
He's even said that, we do want a voice, just not the voice you're saying. You know, I mean, that's what the role of politicians are, I guess. But, things aside, I think it's spot on the mark, man. It's just getting that discussion, sitting down, opening it up. And the wonderful things that it will do, I mean, I attribute the discussion around this and the discussion I have with my friends with the growing relationship I have with my daughter, you know. She's 21. She's got some, I remember when I was 20, well, 20 she is, pretty strong views about things.
Yeah.
You know, and views that weren't views when I was 20 years of age.
Okay.
But then I sort of look back, well, then, you know, some of the things I was doing when I was 20, my old man didn't necessarily agree with. And then I say to myself, well, yeah, but... And how did that affect you, Brad? And I go, well, you know, I'd go periods of months of not talking to my father about it. And I'm sure that probably hurt him. And that was my coping mechanism with not having to deal with him. I didn't have to talk to him. But I don't want that to happen with my daughter.
And look, what's interesting, isn't it, is that what you've changed inside yourself is a receptivity to what your daughter might tell you and how she might actually talk about the difficulties when she was younger in terms of the stuff that you were caught up in.
Mm.
And that implicit in the relationship is the opportunity for a new healing.
Yeah.
Yes? Yeah. That's what's implicit in the dialogue. Yeah. And I think sometimes fathers can get too caught up in... their concern that their son is going astray.
Yeah.
And they're trying to bring them back into the right sort of path. You've got to drop that idea that you're trying to correct something. You have to listen.
Yeah, or protect or defend.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You've got to listen, man. That's it.
You have to open up a dialogue.
Yeah.
And say, well, tell me why you've arrived at that position or your confusion, or why are you suggesting a different pathway than the one that I took? Well, that's appropriate from a generational point of view because generations are obliged to actually figure out a new template or a new basis for understanding. Now, that could be threatening to dads.
Mm.
And we're littered with history of fathers that become implacable against their sons and daughters' emergent consciousness. Mm. Now, sometimes we can be frightened, if you like. Again, it's the old idea of threat, that they're threatening the old order.
Mm.
No, they're not.
No.
They're creating a basis for them choosing to live in life.
Yeah.
So let's just open up dialogue because what the older generations often have is... We've been around. We've seen something.
Yeah, yeah.
We can see that one can get caught up as if the new story is the whole story and it's the truth and nothing but the truth.
When you get a little older, you realise that in your 20s, when you had a story, you pretty much give it up in your 30s, and then you'd give up the story that you had in your 30s and your 40s.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
that's what stories require. Yeah. They need to be upgraded yeah. because your
experience... Well, they evolve. You know?
Your experiences yeah. have taught you something else.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good discussion, man.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a good discussion. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I was sort of thinking about is self-care and boundaries. Now, boundaries are really interesting. I had a woman come and see me, and she was good marriage, good bloke that she's with, lovely children. You know, they hold good positions in terms of their work and that sort of stuff. And she was concerned that people in her husband's work were making too many demands out of hours on his time, and she said, "I'm not happy with this." You know what I mean? And she was wondering, "Can I bring my concerns into relationship with my husband?"
Hmm.
Now, to his great credit, the husband actually said, "Oh, maybe you're right. Maybe I need to put some boundaries up that I'm accessible 24/7, and he holds a position of considerable influence in the community, and so he didn't attack her back and say you have no right to actually sort of investigate or put some demands upon me, but she's wanting to put boundaries around family life, and she wants to put she wants access to her husband, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And to his great credit, so I say to her, well, let's talk about self-care.
Yeah, yeah.
And so she goes home and says, Bodhi said, let's talk about self-care. And he says, oh my God, what am I doing for my self-care? And then from that point of view, he then goes to his wife and says, well, maybe I will put a limit on people making contact with me after hours.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll make that a boundary.
Yeah.
So there's an example of a boundary that's useful.
Yeah.
And that doesn't cross over into other areas of our lives, as if the workplace is the only significant reality of a person's life. It's not. It's a part of it.
Yeah.
So boundaries are interesting and important. And the boundaries of each of our bodies is really important, and that's why the discussion on consent is so interesting and so important, particularly when we're talking about bodies, and that's boundaries. Boundaries, there is a shadow to boundaries, because they can become territorial. I own you,
I see that in someone that I'm related to. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And also countries can become territorial about their boundaries and start to attack other countries and all that sort of stuff. So there's a shadow component to boundaries, but actually as something that protects this couple's relationship, this has been enormously productive, and the man, to his great credit, has been able to come into relationship, and interestingly is now extolling self-care. Self-care is hugely important in all of our lives. How we care for ourselves, and how we care for others.
Yeah.
That's a universal trait of the human story.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, self-care and care of others.
Mm.
So these are a revolutionary sort of notions. That will change the way that we relate as a nation.
Yeah.
These are revolutionary notions.
Yeah.
How we care for ourselves and how we care for others.
That's a great point, man.
And, you know, if you're not caring for yourself, then you've probably got very little compassion for anybody else.
Mm. Mm.
So, and if you're over-caring for yourself, as I'm the only person that actually exists in this room, hang on a minute, I'm here too. So let's open the discussion to include the other.
Mm.
Yeah. These things are fundamental notions of collaboration and joining and team building.
Team building, yeah. A wonderful point. You know, I was talking to someone the other day about, you know, it's always about his work. And it's always about, I might want to talk about it now. And this friend of mine finished. I said, just sit there and listen to it all. And then your way of subtly putting in boundaries can simply be, can I have a moment? Can I say something? You know?
Yeah.
It's like, and I mentioned this a few times, like when I was in real estate, I hated cold calling because I felt, what right do I have calling up somebody and asking them for something and I don't even know who they are?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And I found it was a lot easier, or what I called a shortcut, was by giving them information, these people, by giving them a calendar with my name on it, with tradesmen's names, all of those things. And then I had or putting something in their letterbox to say I sold 52 in your street. But it then gave me a reason to call them and then to inform them of how or what the similarity. And they were more conducive to having that conversation with me. You know what I mean?
Of course.
And that's a wonderful thing, I guess.
Of course.
That's, in a way, setting boundaries.
Because you've extended the possibility of a relationship and you've been helpful.
Yeah.
Because the question I asked is, how can I help?
Yeah.
This is my needs. This is who I am. This is what I need. And how can I help?
Mm.
You know, instantly we've got a collaborative story going on.
Yeah, yeah. And the same can be said, you know, John and I had a discussion. It was really funny because I said to John a couple of years ago, I talked about that quite at length, about accepting recognition, you know, a compliment. And John struggles with it. You know, I hear people now when they get a compliment, they don't say, thanks, I appreciate it. They say, no, I appreciate you. The language around things is changing and we're learning and evolving, you know. Often, I guess, when that came through, was a compliment would come through, I'd sort of think, well, hang on. What's behind that compliment? Is it really meant, or am I really deserving of it? Or second guessing? But now I just take it, everything is being genuine. And first of all, that's my boundary of accepting that compliment. Whether that person is being genuine or not, accept it as being genuine.
Okay.
And it's the response is a lot easier than sort of being dismissive to, because it's quite rude to some people if you give them a compliment and then you dismiss that.
Yes.
You
know what I mean? Well, I think you're starting to talk about discrimination, and that all the data that comes at you. What you're saying is, I'm just going to let a whole lot of stuff in. I'm not going to be naive about this, but I'm just going to bathe in richness, and I'm not going to analyze or dissect or discriminate between. Is that an underhand sort of comment to try and get my approval? Or is that a genuine sort of kind of offering of by this person? Mm-hmm. But I'm going to bathe in the richness of existence. And why not? So we can be too arbitrary in our boundaries and unwittingly exclude everything.
Yeah.
Yes, we're safe.
Yeah.
But no one's talking to you. Because your boundaries are too rigid. So that, you know, there is a shadow side to anything that we talk about.
Yeah.
But look, coming back to self-care, if you haven't got a self-care map, start making one.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
If you haven't got a self-care map, start writing it up. Mm. Start making one. Mm. How do I look after myself? What gives me, what pleases me? Oh. What provides consolation? Mm. What lowers my blood pressure? A thing that I might do, you know. These are all maps that map our self-care. Can I do this with someone, this activity, like going for a walk in the bush? We might then provide self-care for each other, so let's look at the collaborative possibilities of that. This is not a solipsistic on your own map. I think wonder about who else would be interested in doing something with me. That is about self-care.
I love that, boat. I'm going to do that, man.
Making a complex life easier? Well, sorry, listener. You can't make a complex. The reality of life is complex. You can't make it easier. But what I can say to you is keep reminding yourself, I don't have to solve all my problems today.
Yeah. I don't have to solve all my problems today.
I don't have to solve all my problems today. I can sleep on something. I can wait for an invitation from someone else that's talking about their problem so that I'm actually listening and I'm thinking, gee, what they're saying echoes a lot of what I worry about. Isn't that interesting? I wonder what their solutions are for that particular problem they're talking about. Or I might say, so have you come up with something for this particular problem? You know, that I would find that helpful.
Yeah.
So Yeah. Life is complex, but I don't have to solve all my problems today. Take the pressure off yourself.
Yeah, it's a fantastic point. You know, I was speaking to a mate when I was up the coast, and he goes, "Mate, why do you do this? Why do you do what you do? Why, you know?" And I guess if you asked me that 5 years ago, I'd sort of say, "Well, you know, I've been in the situation, and it's nice to sort of know that people aren't alone, or you know, you can be that support." But my answer is completely different today. Why do I do it? Honestly, I do it for one reason. I just learn so much. I do. You know, and you can say things like, "Well, God, that guy's situation is actually worse than mine." Or, "Oh, okay, that's what he does to handle that. Oh, well, put a map sheet out."
Yeah.
You know, all of these things. Yeah, you know, I like that.
The other thing that's really interesting is stress, you know, and stress management is a biggie. So you got to know or identify the stressors that come at you. And the reality is there's two sources of stress. Is the external source, so that's outside of you. So it might be the place where you work, might be the place where you go to school,
yeah.
It might be some bullying that's going on. These are external stressors. Mm. The other reality of stress, though, is our internal stressors, the way that we react to events, and we give coloration to them as if they are personal attacks upon you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that's you doing that.
Yeah.
This is
not the other person.
It's not the other person.
It's like with this an apology.
You.
Yeah.
This is you doing it. So stress management is largely an inside job.
Yeah.
It's in you. And I think what I'm saying to men and young men who are listening, anybody who's listening actually, dogs as well, is about what's your mind chatter?
Yeah.
What's your internal dialogue? Can you map your internal dialogue for me for an hour, please? Because I want to hear it. I want to hear it. And you might be somewhat surprised by your own internal dialogue, which is either hostile to yourself or hostile to others. So you're projecting.
Yeah.
You're projecting onto others, your own behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a goodie. Yeah. That's a biggie. It's going on all the time. Mm. So become interested in your internal dialogue. And if your internal dialogue is riddled with inconsistencies and contradictions, you better do some work on it.
Exactly.
Because all of us generate internal dialogue.
Yeah. And I still do this. I always say, hey, I'm not afraid of being wrong or apologizing. But still, at times I'll say, you know, I'm really sorry I spoke to you like that. You know, if you didn't say what you said, I would probably... It just negates the apology altogether.
Yeah, yeah. You sort of, isn't it?
It's pointless. Well, it's contradicting yourself, isn't it?
Yeah,
you're going against everything you say. It's inconsistency.
Yeah. The thing is that we all come up with I'll use a big word here, epistemology. Which is
epistemology.
Epistemology, yeah.
Sounds like a bloke that goes to the pub too often.
Well, that's right. Or I happen to end up pissing everybody off. You know? Actually, it's not. What it means is something like your worldview or your operational go-to when things happen around you. You refer to your map, your epistemology, your worksheet, your representation of the human experience.
Yeah.
And it always is something that we create. So you've created it by yourself. Is it the truth? No, it ain't. It is always a subjective map of thinking about the world out there.
Yeah.
So if we want to collaborate with others, we've got to recognize that our subjectivity always wants our opinion to be the truth, and everybody has to hear it. Yeah. You know, so you're making a claim which can get you into trouble because I'm telling the truth here. So let's accept that all of us are telling the truth here, and there is no one claim to truth. There are many perspectives to consider. And then we start to sit in a bigger story, a bigger possibility.
Mate, been a great show. Wonderful discussion, isn't it? No, kudos, man. Kudos to John for putting most of this list together. But I think we could almost use it as a format of a lot of shows that we have coming up of discussion. we can say trauma, and we've probably done a dozen shows or so around that trauma, but there's a lot of new information coming in each and every one.
Look, there's a new insight about trauma at the moment, which is really interesting. Now, if you notice when a dog does something and gets scolded,
cowers.
Yeah, or cower.
Yeah.
Or but when it's going for a walk, what it's doing is shaking itself out. It's going like this.
Yeah.
Now, shaking is also a human activity that we've done in the past to actually dislodge trauma, the marks of trauma. There's a new insight. So you've got EFT, which is emotional tapping. So you're tapping meridians in order to do a reset. Shaking is another reset. So you're shaking off the trauma from the body. Because if the body hangs on to trauma, you're in a difficult place.
Yeah.
You've got to learn to shake. Wonderful. And dancing is a form of shaking.
Yeah. Well, you did plenty of that when you were over in Belgium, I saw.
Oh, yeah, no, I did a bit of that. Oh, shaking my booty.
No, great, it's a great point. I'm always cursing bloody Lockie and John in the morning. So I'm like, I'd probably do it twice where you have a cold shower. But every day I'll splash cold water on my face.
And you shake.
It's easy now because it's 27 degrees. But when it's been 4 degrees in my half outdoor bathroom up in the Blue Mountains here, I'm cursing, I'm crashing. But geez, I walk out of the bathroom and I go, oh, I feel good now.
Yeah.
My form of shaking.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So if you've got some trauma and experiencing it right now, get up and have a shake.
Yeah, put your left foot in, put your right foot out.
Yeah, yeah, right? And just shake all the muscles, shake out the thoughts, shake out the trauma, shake out the memory of it, and do it for as long as you can possibly manage of it, and have a good laugh afterwards. And do it the next time the trauma comes up.
Yeah,
a good bit of shaking.
Yeah. No, great point, man.
All right, people.
All right, we're back next
week. Love you all.
We've got some good discussions, some good shows coming up. But if you've got a topic that's pertinent to you or you'd like to perhaps ask Bodie, John, or any of the guests that come on to discuss, send me a text message, 0404-077-666. If you're overseas, Bradley Spillane, Spillane, or Men's Mental Health Show on the Facebook feed. And, send us your questions or your inquiries or your suggestions. And, we're an open book here, man.
Wonderful.
Be kind to each other. Look after each other. And, we'll speak to you next week. It's a Men's Mental Health Show. Thanks for tuning in, guys. All the best.
Your own mental health or that of a mate who's doing it tough. Visit amhf.org.au.
The Community Radio Suicide Prevention Project is produced with the support of the Australian Government Department of Health and Aged Care.